I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hey guys, this is the Outlander After Show on AfterBuzz TV. We're talking Season 5, Episode 6, Better to Marry Than Burn. And we are all here. Say hello, everyone.
Hey.
Hey. I've got my Outlander background.
Yes. We also have Lee on audio as well. We'll see if we can get a picture up for you, Lee.
Okay, sure.
Okay. All right. So let's just go ahead and get into it then. First thoughts on this episode.
So I just want to say that I read the part of the book that corresponds to this. And so I feel like if they, you know, based on the fact they're working a lot with the book and what to pull from it, it felt like parts of it were drawn out, but I did enjoy the very tense scene we got with Jocasta and Murtaugh, which of course was not in the book. And I really appreciated Claire's situation with Wiley, and then the kind of tense fight and then reconciliation we had between Claire and Jamie. Okay.
Yeah, I really appreciated seeing Aunt Jocasta's backstory, because I always wondered about her. I wondered how long she had been blind and all this stuff. So it was just, it was good to see her daughter and good to get a piece, like a little bit more of her. And I did, I was laughing because Jamie being jealous and stuff, like even with his mole on Claire's neck, most husbands, he's so cool. He's just so cool, because that could have went in a really bad way. Mm.
Lady, what were your first thoughts?
I have a lot of thoughts about tonight's episode. A lot of passion coming from, of course, Jamie and Claire in the scene in the barn. A lot of passion between Aunt Jocasta and Murtaugh. And I was also a bit taken by Wiley's character. He's kind of quirky, you know, the makeup, the powder. I thought that was a little bit interesting. And there, I loved Claire's interaction with Wiley. It was peculiar, and I haven't actually experienced Claire's emotions in that vein since I've been a part of the show. So I enjoyed seeing a new character that I wasn't familiar with, Wiley, and the different levels of emotion that were portrayed from the characters tonight. It was very, very powerful.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I overall like this episode. I mean, the pacing of the season has been a bit slow for my taste, but it seems like this is kind of setting up for a little bit more fast-paced episodes to come, with Bonnet, Point Break returning, and others, and also the I guess reintroduction of Philip Wiley, because we have encountered him before, I think last season possibly. It was just an interesting experience. He's annoying, but in any case. Let's go ahead and start with, I know she's a bit bigger part, but actually let's start with Roger and Brianna, just because they kind of have like the B story of this, or C story of this episode. So we have them dealing with a plague, which, you know, it's fitting for the times. How do you feel about that? And just like, I thought that Roger would have figured out smoking the locust out, you know, the moment it was raised, because that's the first thing I thought. What were your all's thoughts?
I figured that after everything we've seen with Roger, so that this was supposed to be his moment to shine and earn the respect of the townspeople. I'm really curious what's going to happen when Jamie returns, because now other people are going to respect Roger more based on the fact that he did come up with this solution. I'm not surprised that it took him a second, because this is, you know, it's not like he's ever had to deal with locusts before. But except for the fact that he would remember a bedtime story that his father told him. So I appreciated that it took a beat for him to figure it out. But then it even wasn't just him. It was Brianna, him, and just everyone kind of pitching in and figuring this out together as a team. I loved that aspect of the community of it, of Roger and Brianna being part of this neighborhood and figuring this out and bonding over it. And so to me, it was a very interesting moment. I personally would never have figured that out about burning them out. So kudos to him for, you know, remembering that story and being aware of how he could use dung and that mixture to smoke out, to keep locusts from landing.
Yeah, the smudge pots.
Yeah.
Smudge pot. I really like the part where Bree and Roger, they just seem to work so easily together as a team. Mm-hmm. And that's something that is refreshing. Mm-hmm. Because when I first thought of them being together, I thought she was too much of an alpha female for him. And it's and then he had such a redeeming moment when he figured out the smoking out the locust part. And she just kind of built him up, and she's like the typical wife, and you know, I'll support you, honey. And we're like kind of like the position we play as wives in the background. We just kind of piece everything together with what we're given. And then how she like thought of the laundry to help distribute the smoke and everything. I thought that was really cool. But I'm really enjoying seeing their couple dynamic.
Okay. And Lee?
I loved how Roger stepped up to the plate. At first, when he expressed, you know, how he wished that Jamie were there, he didn't shrink back. Instead, he really stepped up and took responsibility for the situation, and he drew everybody together, you know, in the community, and they all worked as a team and found a solution. So I've always loved Roger's character because he's sort of the underdog, but he always seems to shine, at least in my book, when he's really, you know, pushed up against the wall. He seems to come up, you know, stronger and with more courage. And I thought that was a very courageous thing to do because he didn't know if it would work. But frankly, they didn't have a lot of options because their crops could have been destroyed. And at that point, it would have been a complete disaster, you know, for the whole community. I thought he did a great job.
Yeah. I just want to say I'm following the chat and we've got a lot of people in here commenting. I'm just going to give a couple of shout outs. We've got Eric Jackson, Elizabeth Brown, Gracie and Ryan, who says that Roger needed a win. Eric Jackson, Rachel disappeared into the stones. I did disappear. It was so I could grab my phone so that I didn't have the chat with the video on making extra noise. So I'm reading the chat from my phone.
Yeah, I thought it was a nice moment for Roger's kind of shine. I guess the only reason I thought he would have thought of smoking earlier is maybe because that's what you do to bees and like to get them to, I don't know, when you harvest honey. So that's the first thing I thought of, but I guess I'm an herbalist, so that would be the first thing I think of. in any case, it was nice to just kind of have that moment for them as a way to bond, because they've had a bit of tension between Bree and Roger, and I'm sure they still have more tension, but based off of last episode, it, you know, they kind of needed something that would bring them together, and Roger definitely needed a win for those times where he could actually feel useful, I guess, you know, because I think he doesn't really feel useful as a professor in those times, which, you know, fair. Any other thoughts on Roger and Brianna before we move on? No? Okay, well, as always, before we move on, thank you so much for tuning into AfterBuzz TV. The ESPN of TV Talk. Please subscribe, follow us on YouTube, rate on iTunes, Apple, all that jazz. We're doing this from our home, so we're loyal to you guys, and we appreciate loyalty in return. It sounds kind of creepy. Anyways, I'm spitballing. Especially after that episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. We love reading your comments, and hit us up on Twitter and all that stuff. All right, let's get back to the show. Okay, so Claire and I was gonna say Sam Heughan because I'm tired. Claire and Jean. they've gotten into a bit of a mess, as they tend to do whenever there's a party. We have them at Jocasta's wedding, and the moment that Philip Wiley appeared with his painted face, as they would say back in the times, I was like, oh no, this guy's trouble. So much trouble.
Yeah.
And doesn't understand boundaries or respect marriage.
At the same time, he was completely disrespecting her, even so, obviously the marriage, yes. Just disrespecting her in general. Of course, this is a time period, but disrespecting the marriage too. But also, this entire storyline, I know that this is typical of season one and season two, Jamie, where we see them fighting like this and then, you know, making up the way that they do. Mm-hmm. But I didn't like it in season one and I don't like it now. So my thing is that every time it happens where they're fighting and then suddenly they just erupt into kisses, it's like, okay, no, I get it. I get that this is them. I prefer it when we have the after conversation where Jamie is actually apologizing and, you know, talking to her first.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a callback to it being a bit of a romance novel when they do that. And I will say, between when it used to happen in season one and now in season five, that the world has changed so much that it definitely affected the way I responded to it, where I was just like, ew, he was being sexist and that feels toxic. And
I always think of season one, where Jamie literally, like, this isn't even that bad compared to what how he used to be in season one, where he treated her like property. So I'm not surprised. I just feel like
all of a sudden it just turned into sex for no reason.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know. But it just, I just wish they hadn't gone there with this.
Yeah, Lee, were you?
It seemed a little off kilter, just a little bit. Like it sort of digressed into a situation that didn't seem appropriate for the storyline. It changed the entire tune, or tone rather, of the scene. And when he said, "Oh, well, you're still a woman," I'm thinking, "Oh, okay." But then, you know, they were in 1746, so I imagine that was the mindset. But to have him say to her, what I've only seen them in loving, kind situations, so that was a little startling for me to see Jamie behave in that fashion.
Well, that's why I'm not surprised, because if we go back to season one again, they've had this a similar conversation before, where Jamie has kind of pigheadedly said that because he was the man, essentially, that made him the one in charge. And so hearing him say, "Oh, well, you're still a woman," it didn't surprise me, because we've seen this from him, you know, 20 years ago, but it surprises me that he's saying it now after they've grown and been through so many things together. And I know, like, I'm not really saying this against, I'm saying this as me. I just get irritated when I don't see someone defending themselves when a man says something like that. And that's no offense against Jamie. I still really like him as a character. I just, that moment, I was like, okay, Claire, please say something back to him. And I know she slapped him, but I expected more.
Yeah, it's something, and also it always just feels kind of out of place, because he will be, and I mean, I guess this is also just true to, like, real life sometimes. He'll be so much on her side, and then he'll say some dumb shit like that, and then the next thing I know, they're slapping each other, and then he's like, he does it clearly just to get a rise out of her. But I don't know. We could change
it up. But you have to think that, like, Claire's present day is the 70s, so you have to think about the family husband-wife dynamics during that time. women have evolved in a tremendous way. And that's why we do feel these moments of disgust and anguish because of chauvinistic comments or like misogynistic comments. Like we feel that way because we are in the new millennium and we've evolved and we've experienced the evolution. Whereas to Claire, it may not be as offensive and it may even feel right.
And she's even so like she left the 1960s, but to me, she's more of a woman of the 1940s, since that's where we started.
I
agree with you. I think that Claire might not be in the same mindset as a woman from 2020. So I agree that her reaction was probably very characteristic. In the chat, we have Merle Ortega saying, at least this time around, Claire has the guts to smack Jamie in the face for saying that to him. So yes, I agree with that.
I've seen her smack him in the face in season one. Like, he's been smacked a few times by her.
And she took a sword and threatened to like do a number on him. So yeah, this isn't the first time she's threatened violence, but
that's not healthy either. Just put it out there. Like, don't be awesome.
Not healthy, but right on.
Like, you guys, therapy is still not a big thing in their time. Not a big thing in the 70s either. We'll get there someday. But so we do see that. So I was kind of curious as to when you guys realized that Claire recognized that the Irish smuggler was Stephen Bonnet. Because at first, I didn't think she was connecting those dots, because I didn't connect it until Wiley said that Mr. Bonnet was his smuggler. So I was surprised that she was making that kind of move, especially with somebody that I considered Wiley to be a threat just by his behavior alone, he would try and pull some crap like he did at the table. So how'd you guys feel about her deciding to go down that path in order to get to Bonnet?
I could see her connecting the dots with her facial expressions when she was talking to Wiley and as he was going into detail, you know, the little eye squint, the look of the, like, concern. And then as she proceeded the conversation, like, she actually stopped and made time for him to talk about business. And so I knew when she wanted to talk more to him, because at first you're just trying to get away from him. But as she went into giving him more of her time, I knew she was on to something.
Yeah, I kind of picked up on that from her facial expressions too, that she knew something. Otherwise, to me, it did not make sense that she was giving him the time of day based on the fact it was so blatantly obvious that he was hitting on her and being disrespectful of the marriage. But I knew I know with Claire that whenever she does something, there's a reason behind it. And so I kind of started to think about the fact that there was a connection to Bonnet and that she could see it. Yeah.
Blake?
Oh, I absolutely agree. Thank you. I noticed when she was allowing him in her space that she had to have some reason for allowing that man close to her, because she was certainly compromising her safety. He's so lecherous. Obviously, we knew what he was thinking. So I'm thinking, why would she allow him that close to her during those scenes? And then, you know, obviously it occurred to me that, well, she has an ulterior motive. Otherwise, she wouldn't, because she obviously can't stand his presence. He's very annoying.
And it makes sense to me too that Claire would have undergone this on her own, because she does have a tendency of trying to handle things herself. So I wasn't surprised that she did this. The other thing is I want to give a shout out to Eric Jackson in the chat. He says, I thought Claire had a good idea early on in the conversation. They knew he was Irish and a smuggler. And then Billie Jean Girl says, the guy was such a creepy stalker. Yeah, I think we could all agree.
Yeah, we can all agree.
So I think it was not that smart of Claire to have had this conversation with him, especially knowing that it was Bonnet. I mean, Wiley has to do is just mention her name and Bonnet's all over it. and able to track them down or access them. So I don't think it was a great move on her part to have entertained it, going like even deeper into it, to try to concoct this business arrangement. I thought that was just like the dumbest move. Like, if you're trying to keep Bonnet away from your daughter and his potential son, why would you connect dots so close to home? Like, that's something you do in the background. That's not something you address head on in that way.
Yeah, I thought it was a weird, I guess it wasn't necessarily a weird choice, but both Claire and Jamie exhibited like behavior from their, you know, younger selves this episode. And, you know, that happens. We get older, but some habits don't change. But sometimes I do wish that they would, I know that the actors have only aged 5 years in this, but if they're supposed to have aged like 20 to 30 years at this point, sometimes I want them to make wiser choices, or choices that seem to be coming from people who've lived a longer life and have learned from their mistakes. And so for her to do that, and then for Jamie to have his response, there were small changes in their behavior, but it didn't seem like 30 years of growth.
The thing that bothered me the most, when Jamie wanted to take Frank's wedding ring and basically gamble it, this felt like the Jamie we would have seen in Paris. And I was like, okay, this feels like we're going back. And the fact that he would come back after the fact and he was drunk, I was like, okay, this is exactly, like, I feel like we're in the wrong season right now, because only because we haven't seen Jamie acting this way in a while. And so, I mean, granted, when Claire went back through the stones the second time and went back to Jamie, he was doing things that were very reckless, but in terms of him acting this way with her, now that they've been back together, this felt like it went back to the beginning. And I agree. I feel like this didn't sit right with me, but I will say this, where I feel like they did mature is after they had sex. That scene afterward where they were sitting and it was them talking and Jamie actually apologizing, that felt like something that would have taken Jamie a longer amount of time to have gotten to in the past. Whereas now he just went right to it after they had a heated moment.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
All right. Any final thoughts on Jamie and Claire this episode? I mean, I was going to say also with him taking the rings, that felt... You know, it was such a traumatic thing the last time those rings were taken from Claire, you know, especially in some type of service to getting to Bonnet or for Bonnet or any of that, in that situation, that it seemed like Jamie just wasn't taking the gravity of that situation, that, you know, that the ring and Bree's ability to recognize it is like one of the unfortunate reasons as to why she even spoke to Bonnet, you know what I mean? So. I wish that he had at least considered that, or they had that beat really in the conversation a little bit longer.
The only other thing I want to bring up about the ring situation is after the episode, when they had the executive producers talking, I found it very interesting that they were both talking about how they brought this up in the writer's room with the rings, and that it was actually the male perspective that said they would be pissed if Jamie had gambled the rings, whereas the females in the room felt like it wasn't a big deal. I personally feel like it's a huge deal.
There's something about Bonnet and jewelry, like even the little black crystal, him and the rings and the crystal. It's just like, now every time I see an accessor, I think of Bonnet. On this show. And then did you guys catch that little snippet where the ladies were gossiping about Dr. Rollins? I was like, oh wow, so she caught them eavesdropping. I mean, she was eavesdropping on their conversation about abortions, clearly, and I thought that was a very heavy topic that they
I don't think it was abortion, I think it was birth control, right?
I thought it was abortion too, and getting
a child.
I think
it was abortion.
Yeah,
because like she's basically telling them, well, if she doesn't have the resources to raise a child, why bring them in the world?
Well, what she said before that was what they were originally said was, putting the husband in a different room for a during a certain time of the month. So she was basically telling them about you're fertile in this period, so don't have sex during this period.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Yeah, because abortion was still very much illegal, even in Claire's time. So I highly doubt that she would just be giving up that information. Like, she's given or offered abortions to Brianna, but it's not something she takes. It's not something I think she would publish in her article. That's dangerous.
Well, she wasn't meaning to publish any of it, really.
Well, that's, yeah, to publish like your medical advice versus to publish how to have an abortion. Like, those are two big steps, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought it was kind of a touch and go topic that they kind of like snuck in there a little bit. And then, you know, we went away from the scene very quickly.
Even birth control is a hot topic, though, especially and especially if you're Catholic, because that is just part of the Catholic religion. Like, birth control is not something that you do.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it wasn't necessarily that that would be illegal or sinful necessarily, like birth control, but it was definitely frowned upon and is for a lot of people still frowned upon.
Ill. Yeah.
Yeah, because back then you can't even say no to your husband. Like, if he wants it, you got to give it up.
I mean, that was that way until about 1995 in America. But legally speaking. But any final thoughts on from Lee or anyone in terms of Claire and Jamie? All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on to Jocasta. I know she had a smaller part, but I felt like this is really her episode, and she got, you know, with her backstory and just what it means for her to sign over her river run to Jeremiah. So what was everyone's thoughts on just like the opening scene where we get to see a younger Jocasta with her family and seeing what happened to her daughter? Whose name? Okay. Morgan? Maruna?
No, yeah, it's Morna.
Morna.
These were my favorite scenes with her. The flashback scene with Hector, and also when we later go and we see her with Murtaugh, that scene with Murtaugh, I literally was crying with her, because it just, the acting, first of all, the acting and the dialogue and the way that it was choreographed, just the way that they were able to convey so much meaning with not even a lot of dialogue. Yes, like Jocasta told Murtaugh her story, but just the little things like the medal and just seeing their reactions to each other, seeing how Jocasta reacted to Murtaugh without even seeing him, and more of a feeling. It was just very, very powerful. And I enjoyed the rest of the episode, but not on the level that I enjoyed this flashback and her scene with Murtaugh.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. This was definitely a highlight for all of Jocasta's scenes for me. I got to know who she was to the core, because I hadn't decided whether or not I liked her or not. And this brought me closer to her as a character and kind of explained a little bit. I do like the Jocasta and Murtaugh dynamic, because they are characters I look up to, and they are like the OGs of Outlander for me. And they have so much nonverbal communication that comes off way stronger than their dialogue. And it's only because they're able to carry that because they are such great actors. The nonverbal communication is on point. And with her being blind, it just heightens it for me. So I love that.
I think for me too, part of the tension there with Murtaugh is that we don't know if he's going to survive. We know he doesn't in the books after Culloden. So now it's a matter of, well, are they going to kill him next episode? Are they going to kill him this season? Like, what, we really have no source material. And so to me, his speech to Jocasta saying that it didn't matter what the state of the world was, that he would, one thing would always be true for him, and it was his love for her. I was blown away with that. And I was like, okay, so then what does this mean? I'll get into it more when we do the page to screen segment, because there's some spoiler stuff with Duncan in the books. But what does this mean in terms of what's going to happen between Murtaugh and Jocasta in the show?
Wait.
I would be really upset if this was one of their last scenes together.
Yeah, that would be unfortunate. Lee, what were your thoughts on it?
I enjoyed the flashback scene. Jocasta's character has always seemed a little bit distant and cold. And so the scene where her daughter was murdered and her reaction at the moment, of course, later with Murtaugh, it gave her character, in my opinion, more depth, and it created more vulnerability for her character and gave me more compassion for her, because I have to say, I never felt those feelings for her character in any other episode, but I enjoyed it quite a bit. And I loved it when she really showed her true feelings as a woman and a human being who has the ability to love, because she's, as I said, she's always felt a little bit distant and unapproachable in other scenes.
Okay. Yeah, it was nice to see. They've kind of alluded to her past, and so it was nice to kind of really get that fleshed out and to really see what she went through to get to where she was, and, you know, the complications that, or the complicated feelings that she has by owning River Run, that, you know, she lost all of her children to get out of Scotland to come to America, and they did that money with, like, basically stolen gold, and so it's nice to give her that kind of complication, especially because I just can't agree with her life. You know, she lives on a plantation and she has slaves. So I just, like, that's always going to be like a strike for me against Jocasta. But
Fair enough.
It was nice to kind of get that fleshed out and to see growth in her character, that she's like, you know, I've chased a man who was passionate about the fight and the war, and I just can't do it anymore. You know, I just need to be happy. She's in the final chapter of her life, and she just kind of wants to go out with somebody who's just going to be there for her and be gentle with her, and not, you know, chasing down a guy who tars and feathers people. I get it. So
we always want the bad guy, don't we?
Huh? The bad boys.
we love the rebels. We love the bad boys.
No more bad boys. I don't care. No more bad boys in my life. All right. Well, are there any final thoughts on Jocasta before we go to page to screen? All right. Let's go ahead into our special segment, page to screen.
All right. So page to screen, obviously from Fiery Cross. I know it's kind of not really, there we go. Peering into the stones, which seems very, fitting. All right. I'm going to put that down. So there are a lot of subtle differences. There's also the fact that a lot of this is out of order. So here's the thing. We all know that Murtaugh did not actually exist in this book. In terms of everything that we're seeing with him. Jocasta was originally supposed to marry Duncan at the gathering at Mount St. Helens in 1770, but she didn't end up actually marrying Duncan until the spring of 71. Here's a major difference. First of all, Brianna and Roger were at the wedding, and then during the celebration, Jocasta is threatened by somebody. So I'm not going to get into it too much other than that. We still get the backstory with Hector and Jocasta escaping Scotland after the Jacobite Rising. But we hear the story, and that's another major difference sometimes in the book, is that we're not actually seeing it unfolding, we're more of hearing the story being told when it's not Claire or Roger's perspective, or, you know, and so the other, just, you know, for example, the other difference is that there were no locusts in the book. And one more thing I want to mention, this is kind of a major spoiler. So if you, this is from the book. I don't know if they're, we don't know what they're going to do in the show. So I really don't want a spoiler. You might not want to listen to this part, but Duncan is not good to Jocasta. In fact, he has an affair later on, not in this book.
Duncan.
Yeah. And so, but here's the thing is that he has an affair, which makes me think that they are going to do something similar in the show, which could lead her back to Murtaugh. Obviously we don't know if Murtaugh's going to live. Yeah, those were the major things to talk about this week with Paige Discreet.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I also, before we wrap up into predictions, I did want to say, because I kind of forgot to bring them up, but Stephen Bonnet, Point Break, appears in the very last scene, and he discovers that River Run now is owned by his son.
The look on his face.
I was like, oh God, why, Hobbit man? Why do you have to go and ruin everything?
Is Sorry. It just me, or is Drake getting more like quirky as he's going along? Because the look that he gave in this episode, I was like, what are we looking at, a Muppet? Like, he just did
Stephen Bonnet. He's been that way. He's always been quirky.
Always, but he feels more so to me. Like, now it's just getting very, like ultra quirky.
I'm talking about Point Break?
Yeah.
This is why he's called Point Break, y'all. He's out, does not fit into the context of the story that he's in. In a show set in 2020. Like, what are you doing, sir? Sorry. Anyways, but I'm curious to see like why or how that's going to play out in terms of him maybe trying to have some claim to River Run through Jeremiah. And I'm curious, and hopefully they'll just kill off, I can't remember this man's name, but Hobbit. I just call him the Hobbit man from Lord of the Rings. But
Fordham?
Fordham. He's causing too much trouble. Oh, he's annoying.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go into prediction. Rachel?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so I am predicting that we saw the previews. So we obviously know that there is kind of a battle coming up, a mini battle. I'm almost predicting that Murtaugh, I don't think he's going to die, but I think that his whereabouts are going to become publicly known. And I think this is where we might see Jaime start to question what he's doing in terms of now being the right time to switch to the other side. I think this might be it, if not really close to it. I feel like by the end of the season, we're going to see Jaime to make the decision to no longer support Tryon and to no longer be able to even pretend to look for Murtaugh. I think it's going to become public knowledge that he is with Murtaugh, not against him. And then my only other prediction, as I kind of mentioned earlier, is that with Jocasta, I think she will marry Duncan, like, then I think after she marries him, I think that it's going to be very obvious very quickly. Then that will kind of lead her back to Murtaugh, and that eventually she'll be able to have like a secret marriage with Murtaugh.
Yeah. I support all of that, honestly. that would be amazing. I think there's going to be a thing between Murtaugh and Duncan. I think Duncan's true colors are going to bleed through sooner than we expect. So, and I think Murtaugh to the rescue. So I also think Roger's going to have more victorious moments where we're going to kind of have a shift in who we think he is as a character. Less weak and less dependent and more, you know, like a Jaime-esque type of character. Lee? Little Jaime.
Oh, sorry.
I think that Jocasta is going to decide to postpone her wedding at the last minute. I think she's going to want a little more time to consider her true feelings before she makes a decision to move forward with the marriage, with the wedding. And I also think that Jamie and Roger's relationship is going to shift. I think Jamie may feel perhaps even a little bit threatened by Roger taking on more of a manly role and more responsibility and people looking up to him. I think that might be a little threatening to Jamie when he gets back home.
I think that, Bree did say like this little nugget of it being that battle being the start or the spark of the American Revolution. So that would kind of be crazy. And I think if that's the case, then Jamie's definitely going to switch sides over to side with Murtaugh. My cats are doing stuff. Stop that. I think that he'll come to that side to fight against the British, since that's, you know, the path that he's going to know they're already on anyway, just from Claire and Bree having future knowledge. And then I hope that when it comes to Bonnet, that it really comes down to Bree dealing with him. And I think I've said this last episode, and not Jamie and Claire or even Roger, because I think it's really Bree who deserves the right to stab him in the chest.
Just take him out. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, so that's my hope for that. But all right. Well, this wraps up this episode of the Outlander After Show on AfterBuzz TV. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Adrian Snow. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Adrian Snow, MSEDRINSNOW. You can also catch me on Thursdays for the Magicians After Show on AfterBuzz TV. And Rachel, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Rach Goodman or on my author Instagram account at Rachel Radner Author. If you enjoy romance, I have my debut novel out now on Amazon called A Setting Sun Can't Save My Soul. Also, if you like Stumptown or Curb Your Enthusiasm, I'm on those AfterBuzz shows as well.
All right, Anjel.
Hey guys, you can find me on all social media platforms under Anjel Taylor _. Anjel is spelled like angel with an E at the end. You can also catch me binge watching On My Block.
All right, and Lee.
Well, I want to first shout out to all the Blacklanders who tuned in tonight and all the 50 plus and fabulous folks. My name is Lee Broadway. You can find me on my website at 50 plus, that's 50plusandfabulous.com. You can also find me on Twitter at 50 plus and fabulous at Lee Broadway. That's LEIGH Broadway. And of course, Instagram at 50_plus, PLUS_and_fabulous.
All right, that wraps it. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we will see you next week.
Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.